going to need in order to develop pharmaceuticals from future diseases that haven't even happened yet. So from just a purely human self-interest standpoint, it is an imperative situation to understand what's happening to the Amazon and the need to protect it.
Dr. Jamil, we want to thank you so much for being with us. His new book, The End of Ice, Bearing Witness and Finding Meaning in the Path of Climate Disruption. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a full-time, one-year paid news production fellowship. Details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, Trina Nadura, Tay Marie Astudio, and Libby Rainey. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock. Coming up next, Dan Handelman joins Abe and Joe to discuss Portland's future as a member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And they take your calls.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series. Every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater, Monday, February 18th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen Do the Right Thing, the Spike Lee joint which follows a Brooklyn neighborhood's racial tension on a hot summer day. Again, Do the Right Thing, showing Monday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hey, good morning. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Abe Proctor and me, Joe Uris, we got guests and we got to talk about the relationship that has developed between the federal authorities and the city of Portland and the whole idea of a joint terrorism task force and the desire of many of us to turn that around, to make a change. With me in studio is Dan Handelman, Copwatch, and something else now.
No, it's Portland Copwatch is part of a group called Peace and Justice Works.
So okay, and also by phone, a guy who's had some experience in law enforcement and is a person who is willing to make the challenging suggestions that we abandon these programs. So that's Michael German. So, Michael, are you there?
I am. How are you?
Great. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks for joining
Michael's
us.
Michael's on the phone. So what are we going to do today, I think, is we're going to hold back on calls for the first half of the show and then take calls in the second half because both of our guests have to leave at 8:30.
That's right. If you have a burning question,
you can write
into the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, and we'll see if we can squeeze it in.
Okay, let's just get to it. I'm really interested in this. Now, what is your... First of all, what is this relationship between the federal authorities and the local authorities, the Joint Terrorism Task Force? What's its function? What does it do? And what's the reality of it? Let's start with that.
I guess I'll start on this, and if Mike has stuff
to Michael,
answer.
You can get into it if you want to.
In the mid-1990s, the Congress authorized the creation of joint terrorism task forces after the first attack on the World Trade Center. And so we actually got one in this region in 1997. And, well, that's when Portland first joined. There were some Nike World Games going on, and the Portland police joined into this coalition with FBI and other law enforcement agencies. And, you know, after 9/11, those law enforcement agencies got new names. So some of the ones that are involved in the task force include Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the IRS, Homeland Security, and there are other local police agencies in there too, Clackamas County, Washington County Sheriff's Offices, and the Multnomah County Sheriff himself is part of the JTTF, Mike Reese, former Portland Police Chief. And so that, you know, they supposedly are organized to disrupt terrorism and terrorist activity, but the initial city council agenda item that we found in the year 2000, again, a year before 9/11, said something about targeting left-wing and right-wing groups, including
really
the Animal Liberation Front and the Earth Liberation Front. And Charlie Hales, who was then a commissioner, he eventually became the mayor, said, this sounds like something out of the Nixon era. And he had them rewrite the agreement to pull out some of that offensive language. But it's pretty clear this was about political targeting of specific groups.
Now, let me just interject right there. But mm-hmm. You talked about both right and left-wing extremist groups. I'm guessing that one received more attention than the other. Is that?
Yeah, well, clearly the history of the FBI is that the left-wing groups, and I think Michael can give you a recent example of where they target left-wing groups rather than right-wing groups. So we started organizing in the year 2000. We got a bunch of labor unions and community groups to mobilize to city council and try to get them not to sign the agreement in 2001, and then 9/11 happened. But still, we had so much momentum that we had people pack in City Hall. It was filled to the rafters, and Charlie Hales actually voted not to sign the agreement, and it was an emergency ordinance, which meant they had to have a unanimous vote. So they had to vote on it a second time because of all the community pressure. Fast forward 2005, our mayor was now former police chief Tom Potter. He said, my officers who are working under me get to have top secret clearance from the FBI. I can't get top secret clearance. How am I supposed to supervise the officers underneath me if I can't get this top secret clearance? So I'm pulling us out. And he did that in 2005. Now, blah, blah, blah. Fast forward again. November 2010, FBI operated a sting operation on Mohammed, a Somali immigrant who was a teenager at the time and had no ability on his own to do anything bad, but they gave an apartment, they built a fake explosive device for him, and then they arrested him and frightened the city of Portland.
Yeah, he was going to blow up the Christmas tree.
That was the plan that they helped urge him to do.
The real war on Christmas.
It was the FBI Mission Impossible fake scam sting operation war on Christmas. So anyway, we call it a holiday tree here anyway. So the point is that it did scare the city council. They said, we want to join on a case-by-case basis. That went on for about 4 years, and then they said either we have to get all the way in or all the way out. 2015, they decided to stay to get all the way in on a 3-2 vote, so it was very tight. And Amanda Fritz is the only remaining one of those two votes now. So now, Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, who has a show still on KBOO here, wants to get us back out again. And there's a resolution on the agenda tomorrow, 2 o'clock in the afternoon at City Council, to do just that. The problem is she needs 3 votes. The mayor has introduced a counter-resolution that says, we think the Joint Terrorism Task Force keeps us safe, so we're going to sign another memorandum. We might modify it a little bit, but we want to stay in. So one of those two resolutions, or one is a resolution, one is an order. One of those two pieces of legislation is going to get 3 votes tomorrow, and we still don't know what it is. So we're organizing and mobilizing people to get down there and testify in favor of getting out, and hoping the community members will write to City Council and say, we want out.
Yeah, I think it's really important to understand this process. Way back, there was a division of the police department beginning, I think, actually in the 1920s, called the Intelligence Division, which claimed to be looking into any kind of radicals, left, right, whatever. But in fact, it was an agency of the police department that fundamentally harassed the left. And that continued on. I can remember it continuing on way into the 70s and into the 80s. So that's
they still have. It's called the Criminal Intelligence Unit now.
Oh, okay.
And that is where the two officers who get the top secret clearance to be deputized as FBI agents in the JTTF, and who work part time, I should add. But that's, you know, to me, it's irrelevant. Right. If they work at all inside the FBI offices, they're participating in this. So they're part of that Criminal Intelligence Unit, which still exists to this day.
Well, I can remember it.
Right.
Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
Right. I think you're making exactly the right point that back in the 50s and 60s and early 70s, the FBI had a program called COINTELPRO that did that same sort of political spying and suppression of political groups or protest groups that J. Edgar Hoover didn't like. And yeah,
particularly
African
Americans.
Throughout law enforcement, particularly African Americans, particularly anybody who was challenging any government policy. When those programs were exposed, first in the federal government through the Church Committee, but then later through city departments across the country, everybody decided that this concept of intelligence was way too loose and it needed to be focused on what they called criminal intelligence. And how they distinguished between these was a very simple term they called reasonable suspicion. That the FBI...
Wait, reasonable suspicion?
Right. Which is a low standard, right?
Yeah.
I mean, most police officers and law enforcement officers wake up suspicious. so it's still a low standard, but at least it was a standard. And that's the standard I worked under at the FBI throughout the 1990s, as I did undercover work infiltrating right-wing terrorist groups, far-right terrorist groups. So I found it to be effective because when I went into a neo-Nazi meeting, everybody was saying something that I didn't like and that worried me, but the rigor of having to write down on a piece of paper the facts that made me believe this individual was doing something that was illegal helped me keep the investigation focused on the right people. So I thought it was a reasonable standard, and police adopted this standard as well, and it became part of Oregon law. And so fast forward to 2001, there were people within the FBI who had been trying to get rid of these rules ever since they were put in place in the 1970s. So those rules were washed away in the fear and shock after 9/11. And the FBI expanded these joint terrorism task forces to utilize state and local law enforcement in a more aggressive way. The only problem is these state and local laws didn't change. So the FBI is now asking police departments to come on to the JTTFs or stay on the JTTFs when their rules have been watered down so significantly. They actually need no predication that somebody is actually engaged in criminal activity in order to start very intrusive types of investigative activity.
Okay.
And that's with the Patriot Act, where it's electronic, but also with the old going out on the street and following protesters.
Yeah, I want to just tell our audience, because we didn't really introduce you formally, but you were with the FBI for 18 years, is that correct?
16 years,
sorry. But you are,
no worries.
I wanted to make the point that you're experienced in this. You're not simply a critic. You're a person who is actively involved in law enforcement.
Right, and successfully worked terrorism cases that under the old standard. So I know it's an effective standard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that it's really important for people to understand this history going way, 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 way back. With the beginning, I'm going to just set an arbitrary beginning, which would be World War I, opposition to that war, and that evolved into an argument on the question of organizing labor and the IWW, that's the International Workers of the World, or Industrial Workers of the World, and essentially a movement to destroy any left wing in American politics. And that has been a thing that it was interrupted somewhat during the Depression, when there was a great deal of fear about a revolution or change in America, where there was more tolerance for left wing organizations, and the creation of the CIO, the Congress of Industrial Organizations, which essentially was organizing workers based on industries rather than crafts, which made them somewhat more radical. All of that, it has to be seen in the context of what's happened and the birth of the Cold War and then the incredible McCarthy period and the paranoia that came after World War II and the Korean War and Vietnam and so on. So this is a bigger question than simply a terrorism task force of this time. It's a question of how we deal as a nation with dissent and with alternative politics.
Except it's not just only political, because they're also targeting Muslims and Arab Americans and immigrants. I mean, this task force now, especially after 9/11, that's one of the main focuses.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And last year, the FBI categorized essentially Black Lives Matter and people like that as black identity extremists. So that has become another...
Well, I get the idea of black identity, but extremists?
That's what they call them.
Right.
Now, is there no network of, playing devil's advocate for just a moment, within the JTTF, are there no checks? Are there no safeguards in place to ensure that their power is not abused? This way?
Well, so Michael referred to the Oregon state law a minute ago. It's called ORS 181A.250, and it's this law that the ACLU helped pass in the 1980s that says you can't collect or maintain information on people's social, political, or religious affiliations unless you have reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. That's one of the main reasons we've been saying since the beginning that Portland shouldn't even be part of this, because the FBI doesn't have those constraints. We have raised the very deep concern in this current campaign, which has been going on for 2 years to get us out of the JTTF, that ICE, the Immigration and Customs Department, being part of it means that some people will get deported based on investigations about alleged terrorism. And so instead of denying it, the FBI special agent in charge, Ren Cannon is his name, has said on the record several times, including in the Oregonian in an op-ed piece just the other day, that they, quote, they never open a case based on someone's immigration status. Their mission priorities do not include immigration enforcement. We only use immigration violations when there are no other options to disrupt crimes or violence. I can't guarantee the task force won't utilize immigration charges, says Special Agent Cannon. I can guarantee we will only use these charges when necessary. I guarantee that state and local officers will never be used in immigration enforcement. But we have a second law that I don't want to make, I think it's 181A820, that says they local law enforcement can't expend any money on immigration enforcement unless there's reasonable suspicion of a crime. So essentially, the special agent is saying that if we can't prove there's a crime, we're going to deport somebody. So that puts the officers in the position of violating both statutes if they work with the FBI on this task force.
Yeah, and I want to add one other thing. There was an effort to clean up the old Red Squad, the intelligence division of the police department, and the records were supposedly destroyed, but it turned out they were just simply taken away and hidden in a building outside of the jurisdictional area. And that's still a scandal, and those records are still probably moribund, probably just sitting there, but they still exist. And I can remember from my experience as a much, much younger man how much the interference of the police was involved in any kind of left-wing or peace movement stuff. So, you know, we know the history of this kind of repression. We understand how it works.
Right.
You know, and Michael, I wonder, can you elucidate better than I have exactly what I'm talking about?
Sure, and it goes back to the earlier question about whether there's any oversight. I mean, that's the second half of this problem. I mean, even if you had strong rules like Oregon has, they're only effective if there's actually public accountability and independent oversight. And for the Joint Terrorism Task Force, that's very rare. What we have seen right from the very beginning, the ACLU, within the first years after 9/11, issued Freedom of Information Act requests that identified a number of different protest groups, groups like Greenpeace, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, the Thomas Merton Peace and Justice Center, groups that are mainstream protest groups, were being spied on by the Joint Terrorism Task Forces. And it created a little scandal where the FBI created false stories around what they were doing that resulted in a long investigation by the Department of Justice and Inspector General, who found that the FBI was using nonviolent civil disobedience as a predicate for targeting protest groups.
Nope.
But that was okay under the rules.
Nope.
So here we have the rules that have since gotten even worse. In 2008, the FBI reduced its rules once again And The Guardian last week came out with an article about a San Francisco terrorism investigation that the FBI opened after a white supremacist riot in Sacramento. And it is exactly all the things that the rules are supposed to prevent. It actually describes the Ku Klux Klan as, and I have the document in front of me, so I'll quote from it. It is a group that some perceive to be supportive of a white supremacist agenda.
All right. They're just role players. They wear nice costumes.
Right. So to justify an investigation of the anti-racist protest group that was protesting them, that in this riot, the anti-racist protesters were stabbed by skinheads. And rather than saying that in the paper, they used the passive voice to make it unclear who got stabbed as justification, again, for doing the investigation when they had actually, if they had actually written the facts, the investigation would have targeted the other party, the white supremacists. So this type of investigation is what, in the FBI's current rules, they call a sensitive investigative matter. So it requires the chief division counsel, the lawyer within the FBI's field office, to okay the investigation. And despite the factual errors in it, despite the use of nonviolent civil disobedience as a predicate, the CDC apparently approved this investigation. So clearly the internal oversight and internal controls are not sufficient to protect protest groups.
Now, Dan mentioned a few moments ago FBI agent Wren Cannon. Agent Cannon told the Willamette Week back in December, quote, "We did not intend and we do not designate groups as extremists or not extremists. We're talking about specific individuals who have committed acts of violence." Now, Michael, it sounds from what you've just finished telling us that that statement is false on its face. The FBI routinely targets people.
The document I'm mentioning was part of a Guardian article, but it was actually discovered by a group called Property of the People. You can find their website and see the documents, and it's very clear that they're targeting a group called By Any Means Necessary and using their nonviolent civil disobedience protest activities as justification for labeling them terrorists. And keep in mind, this has a real impact, right? When the FBI opens a terrorism investigation, the subjects of that investigation are put on the terrorist watch list. So they may have trouble flying, they may have consequences whenever they get pulled over by a police officer or have any kind of interaction with the government. So this isn't something that's happening behind the scenes that may not impact your life. It's something that can have a dire impact, a very serious impact on your life.
Yeah, I think it's really important to understand that, and what I was saying earlier, this is a bad tradition that has gone on ever since, I think way back into the 1800s, but ever since certainly World War I. And it has manifested itself in a variety of ways, but it's still consistently an attack not on the right, but generally on the left, and all varieties of left. And this is something that is unfortunate in our history, but to have a city now involved directly in the process of that seems to me to be terribly unwise.
Yeah, I think there's also a case where they were labeling pro-choice activists as terrorists. Is that right, Michael?
Right, that's exactly right. The same group, Property of the People, released some FBI training documents on abortion extremism, is what they called it.
Abortion extremism?
Right, and it listed some of the violence that was committed by anti-abortion groups, but then indicated there was both sides, that there was a thing called pro-choice extremists.
What was that?
Read the document, right? Even though the document said there was only one person who was engaged in violence, arguably from a pro-choice point of view. But that person acted independently. It was not part of any pro-choice group. So it's this odd characterization, kind of this false both sides political argument rather than focusing on the facts, which is what a law enforcement agency could do. But worse, even though it acknowledged that there wasn't really a movement, there was one person who did one bad thing, it then laid out a profile of what they called pro-choice extremists. So it could be expected to encourage police departments to go out and conduct spying operations or monitoring of political activity by people just engaging in the political process.
So just to make a point, the reason we have to leave at 8:30 is that this is a two-part process this mm-hmm. time for the city council hearing. They're going to have a work session this morning where they have invited Special Agent in Charge Cannon, the Chief of Police, the U.S. Attorney Billy Williams, and one other person whose identity we still don't know, to give the case of why we should stay in, and then Mr. German and a woman named Zahra Belu, who's executive director of the Bay Area Council on American Islamic Relations. She helped San Francisco pull out of their JTTF in 2017. She will be there, and Casey Jama of Unite Oregon, a local group that works on immigrant rights and a host of other civil rights issues, is also testifying there this morning. That's by invitation only to testify, but it's open to the public. And then tomorrow afternoon, as I said, at 2 o'clock, that's when the actual vote is supposed to happen.
Hmm. You know, this is an unusual opportunity to both reveal the behavior that is not fully acknowledged by the law enforcement community, and to do away with a process where Portland and other cities essentially are losing control of their local operations, whether they have merit or not, and in that process creating a national, I would say, paranoia around what really is a very weak and hardly dangerous left.
Yeah. So
right.
So,
and you
go ahead.
I liken this back to the civil rights era, where you had state governments that were refusing to protect the constitutional rights of their citizenry, so the federal government had to step in and say, no, we need you to follow these rules. Where here we have the federal government that has so lowered their investigative predicates that people who are not doing anything wrong can be subject to investigation. So it's up to the state and local governments to say, no, when you're operating in our territory, we want you to follow this higher standard. And I think if we can get that, you know, it happened here in Portland before. They were out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force for quite some time. Now San Francisco Police Department is out of the task force. If enough cities can say, we want you to have higher standards, that will compel the FBI to increase their standards to protect our constitutional rights, which is part of their responsibility
yeah,
as well.
And I want to emphasize, this is not an academic question. This is not an intellectual issue. As you said earlier, and it's really important to understand, it can really affect how you are treated by the police in ordinary stops. It can affect your ability to travel on airplanes. It can have an enormous impact on your ordinary life, not to mention the fact that there can be spying that you are unaware of going on in your life.
Yes.
So it's very very much a totalitarian move by the government.
One of the people we have involved in our campaign is Brandon Mayfield, who you may remember as a local attorney who's Muslim, and I remember him. Right,
mm-hmm.
And he was illegally spied on. They thought that he was the Spanish train bomber, and because they had a bad fingerprint, he actually was jailed for a while, and then they ended up having to apologize to him. But he knows firsthand how bad this can have an impact on your life. Michael, you're going to weigh in?
Right. The FBI also has what they call a disruption strategy. So it goes back to the old story about putting Al Capone in jail for tax evasion rather than the many murders and other corrupt activities he was involved in. And so if you come under the FBI's microscope as a potential terrorist, they can use other techniques. So they can go through your garbage, they can engage in undercover operation, or not what they call covert activities, they can use informants, they can do all sorts of techniques to gather information and then prosecute you for something totally different. That you have no idea that the reason that they found some small mistake that you made that you're being prosecuted for is because they were doing this much larger investigation, and they consider that a disruption of your activities. So when there's that kind of selective prosecution, that used to be seen as a constitutional violation, but now that's actually part of the practice. So you might, and it goes back to the COINTELPRO days. One of the things that the church committee talked about was how people who were subjected to these sorts of torments never knew why they were being treated that way. And unfortunately, we're in a situation where it's happening again.
Now you guys have to get up and get out of here. I understand that.
Before I go, I want to give one last thing, the website where you can get more information about this whole thing and the campaign, which has, by the way, our letter to the city council has 48 signatures on it right now, including peace, social justice, faith, and all sorts of groups that are opposed to the JTTF. So the URL is portlandcopwatch.org/pjttf.html.
Can you repeat that again?
portlandcopwatch.org/pjttf.html.
Now, can our listeners add their names to that?
There's a tool the ACLU has where they can send a letter directly to council. What we're trying to gather organizational signatures.
Gotcha.
So if there's anybody who's involved in an organization that wants to add their name, please contact Portland Cop Watch. There's a link on the page to email us.
Yeah, I want to thank both of you for being here. And I know that both of you have to go to this meeting, and I think it's very important. What we're going to do now is open this up for you listeners to call in, make comments, argue, discuss, or perhaps talk about your own personal experiences.
Yeah, thank you both for joining us today. All right, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name's Abe, that's Joe right over
there. I'm
Joe. 503-231-8187 is the number to call to take part in this conversation. Also, you can reach us over the internets at facebook.com/AbeandJoe or over the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Before we go any further, a little business. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Alternative Radio features Ralph Nader speaking on the unjust prosecution of those who commit crimes in the streets versus those who commit crimes in the suites. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein looks at Israeli lobbyists, the militarization of the U.S. border, and other breaking news issues of the day. At 11, Stage and Studio and Art Focus make room for a special broadcast of Peace, Love, and Soup with Tave Fasha Drake and Brian Delaney. Peace, Love, and Soup. What's not to like about that?
Peace, Love, and Soup, yeah.
All of this and more coming up today on your listener-supported community radio station, KBOO.
Yeah, and we do want to hear from you out there. And I think it's really important to understand that this is a historically common problem where the government of the United States and local governments have operated to make sure that any left-leaning or liberal organizations become under surveillance and have dirty tricks played on them and so on and so on. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I can tell you of many cases in Portland, Oregon, where police spying and police operations deliberately were done to mess with organizations supporting integration or supporting peace or opposing the war in Vietnam, for example.
It's also important to note that this the sort of violations we're talking about today were exacerbated by September 11th. The crack that event opened in our civic practices allowed a lot of these authoritarian tendencies to creep in and become codified. And the JTTF and its tactics are a perfect example of that.
Yeah, and it's particularly important to recognize who the President of the United States is at this time, when that is what the administration is about. This is a moment in American history unlike any other. And this is really an opportunity, this question of getting out of this task force, this is an opportunity for states and cities to say, no, we still believe in civil liberties, we still believe in civil rights, and we still believe in due process. And I'm hoping that the city council will come to its senses on this matter.
I was chuckling under my breath when Michael was talking about, you know, the FBI's disruption tactic, meaning, you know, he gave as an example Al Capone being busted on tax evasion instead of for all the other crimes. And it occurred to me that that's very much like, you know, going after a president for campaign finance violations,
right.
You know, rather than all the other nefarious
but
stuff.
But it's important also to understand that the law enforcement community engaged in murder against the Black Panthers. I mean, this gets very real and very serious. It starts out with, you know, you just mess with a meeting or whatever, and then very soon you find that the process goes beyond the law and becomes violent.
Should we bring our listeners in to this conversation? Let's go to Dave. Good morning, Dave.
Quick question. Good morning. Your guest, I
came in on this late. Mentioned the Sacramento, California police recently surveilling counter-Klan demonstrators. I won't call them by any of these cute names that they're being called by now, but they're the Klan. Because of suspected terrorists in the anti-Klan demonstrators,
right,
where the white supremacist demonstrators were quote-unquote suspected of possibly having racist tendencies or some mealy-mouth language like that. It was sort of like saying that Philip Knight is suspected of possibly having a small knowledge of running shoes.
That's a good analogy. Look, this history, and I really want to emphasize the historic aspect of this, because it's been a part of American history for a long, long time. There has always been a history of opposition to anarchists, socialists, communists, liberals, and that has often been operated by state and local governments as well as by the FBI. There's no question about the process. There's no question about how often it has happened. I, for example, years ago asked for my files from the FBI. I was in D.C. for a conference and went into the FBI headquarters and got my file, and three-quarters of it was redacted, you know. So I don't know what they think they know or what they thought they were doing, and I will never know.
And you've probably forgotten a bunch of that stuff anyway. So.
Well, I can't remember. Where was
it? It was
FBI?
The 60s. You never remember. Right.
No, so this is really a serious matter, and it's not an academic question. The role that Portland is playing in supporting this, I think, potentially totalitarian approach to law enforcement is very serious, and I'm hoping that that the council will come to its senses on this matter. I also hope that the demonstrations and the activities at City Council will stay rational, and good arguments will be made, because this is real. This is very dangerous in American history.
And I'm not a Portland resident, but people like Joanne Hardesty, who are properly skeptical of police power.
Well, any of us who have ever been active in activities have found out that that's real. There was an officer who was assigned to me, as far as I can tell, way back when I was organizing peace marches. I mean, we're talking a long time ago. I'm not going to mention his name. I think he's dead. No point in darkening his family's history. But he was real. He would do things. He would set things up. He would manipulate events to create a situation where some left-wing organization or some peace organization would be discredited. And this included attacks on the American Friends Service Committee and other organizations of perfectly legitimate nature.
Yeah.
Well, listen, hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think the caller brought up something that's very important in a sort of meta way these days. He talked about the mealy-mouthed, wishy-washy terms used by the government to refer to an obviously racist group of people in the Sacramento incident. We hear that similar mealy-mouthedness all the time. Like a Congressman, Steve King of Iowa, comes to mind, recently made some really outrageous and very racist comments. But journalists were very loath to actually go out and use that word racist. They'd call it racially charged and used other sort of, wishy-washy euphemisms to do that. That, I think, is an unfortunate regression in the way that we publicly talk about these sorts of things.
No, I think you're right. And I think it's really important that we have an even-handed and I would say very limited approach to dissident organizations. And this task force does not take that approach. It takes a very proactive approach. It frequently exceeds its bonds. It frequently, in fact, puts people in the crosshairs who don't really deserve that. And it's a bad process. And I'm very disappointed in many in the city council who some of whom I know, who are insisting that this is a good thing. It's not. It's a bad thing. And it's part of a history of FBI abuse that has gone on forever. Even under, we thought, well, J. Edgar Hoover's gone. Now it's more bureaucratized and it's more rational. That's not any better. It's simply a different approach. J. Edgar Hoover used to, one of the things I found on my stuff from the FBI was that he was initialing every page of stuff coming in about me. Now, I was nobody. He was simply doing that because that was part of his paranoid approach to law enforcement.
Well, I don't know. If so redacted, you must have been up to some really shady stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know. I mean, I organized the first peace march in Portland back, I think, 1960.
Yeah, you're dangerous.
Before you were born, man.
All right, let's go to Chris. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. I'm a first-time caller. I really resonate to the disruption tactics that go back a long way for me, too, when...
Hello?
Chris, go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, we lost you there for a second. Can you repeat your last couple sentences?
Yes. I go back to experiencing disruption as a teacher at the University of Colorado in the 60s when I was one who was opposing the warrant, ended up being arrested by the FBI for refusing induction. When very few people were being arrested, I was vocal on campus, and the outcome was the idea of disrupting one's life as an approach to controlling dissent was what I experienced. It led me to make some choices where I ended up becoming an Episcopal priest and found myself taking a different path in life. And all I can say is that even when things are as seemingly deceitful and nasty as they are, we can still find ways to counter what kind of atmosphere is going on. So I really applaud the efforts being made by your guests and all the others who are signing on to these things. It needs to keep happening. Got to find this way to resist too.
Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate your perspective. I want to again emphasize this is not this approach that is the terrorism task force approach is a kind of a new approach and a more formalized approach to this. But I can remember in my own life, when I was doing a reporting, legitimate reporting, getting refused access to a press conference for then President Ford, Gerald Ford, based purely on the local Red Squad's decision to keep me out of that event. And this was a bizarre thing where essentially I was faced down by a guy from the security end of the administration and the local Red Squad guy, and they were saying, okay, we'll give you a press pass on one condition, that we will hold you, and I'm not kidding here, we will hold you personally responsible if anything happens to Gerald Ford. And I had to say, look, there's no way I'm going to agree to that.
No, dude falls down flights of steps and stuff.
Yeah, right.
Who knows what's going to happen?
You know, and he was having bad luck all the time. Anyway, so you know, at that point, fortunately, an Oregon Journal reporter happened to overhear this and put it in the paper. But otherwise, it would have gone unremarked upon. And I really believe that it's very easy for people in law enforcement, whatever their motives, to overstep the bounds of their legitimate role and to create an organization that essentially is saying, well, we'll spy on people and we'll decide on who we'll spy on, and they won't necessarily know, and they may not get to fly on a plane and they won't necessarily know why, is outrageous.
Just it is outrageous. Yeah. And I think it's intentional. That's supposed to spread fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Unsurprisingly, the editorial board of the Oregonian has come out in support of remaining in the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
I used to write for the Oregonian.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that when you were doing legitimate reporting or illegitimate reporting?
Well, what's illegitimate reporting?
Well, I don't know. It was just a few minutes ago.
I don't know. They were paying me.
You said back when I was doing legitimate reporting, so I was wondering if
I see. I shouldn't have used that word. No. Anyway, yeah, the Oregonian used me on the op-ed page quite a bit. But now they don't, of course, do anything like that. In fact, I don't think the Oregonian's a newspaper anymore.
It is, in name anyway. Here's the editorial board on this subject. The task force, that's the JTTF, focuses on threats of violence, whether a tip on a potential shooter or the 2016 standoff at the Malheur National Wildlife refuge. The task force's work faces various and broad checks and balances, which we know from our guests is not true, from federal judges who approve wiretaps to local juries who consider their cases. And Portland does face security risks. Commissioner Nick Fish, who supports the task force, has been regularly briefed by the FBI and told the Oregon editorial board he has been surprised by the number of potential threats concerning the city's large port system. Now, I don't doubt that the FBI has communicated information about potential threats to our port system to Commissioner Fish, and I do not doubt that he's been surprised at the volume of them.
Well, I would use the word alleged threats. I don't even know.
Certainly.
The FBI often lies.
The FBI often lies, but it's also true that law enforcement officers have to take threats they hear and at least, you know, look into whether or not they're legitimate.
Sure.
Correct? Okay. But what I find it really hard to believe is if Portland were to withdraw from the JTTF, would the FBI suddenly stop sharing that information with Portland authorities? I really don't think that they would. That would be a dereliction of duty, would it not?
It certainly would. But beyond that, this is a step, one step of many steps toward a totalitarian regime, particularly as regards law enforcement and dissident voices.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. But this, I think, to propagate the notion that the safety of our city depends upon remaining as an active member of this task force, it's simply not true. The facts just don't bear it up.
Right.
Yeah, we were not a member for several years, and to my knowledge, you know, nothing catastrophic transpired here in Portland. The only terrorism I witnessed during that period was of the domestic variety, perpetrated by white nationalists.
Yeah, which apparently is much more tolerated than a left-wing, like the anti-fascist.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And something that our guests mentioned, I think, is incredibly important to bear in mind. When they talked about, that incident in Sacramento, where first the mealy-mouthed language was used to describe an obviously violent racist organization. What was described by our guests there was the same sort of asymmetrical selective enforcement that we've seen here in Portland at the local level, where more attention is paid by law enforcement authorities on the scene to the left-wing half of whatever's going on than is paid to the right-wing violent racist nationalist half of what's going on. We saw that this past August down on the waterfront.
You were there, weren't you?
I was there, yeah. And I can say that this is just me observing the situation. There were a lot of cops there. There were a lot of cops in heavy riot gear, clearly ready for, you know, some funny business to go down. Their attention, their posture was overwhelmingly focused on the left-wing counter-protesters there. It was as if they were there to safeguard the white nationalists who had decided to march through the streets of our city that day.
Yeah, and I would add that the white nationalists mostly were from Vancouver as they crossed the state line to do what they were doing.
Yeah, there were quite a few from Vancouver, but there were quite a few homegrown folks there. I talked to them. As we recall, we did a show not long after where I played some audio clips from there. There was even a dude from Arkansas there who said he was there to stand up for Confederate values. But my point is that we see this asymmetry all over the place, not only with local law enforcement, but with the FBI. You cannot assume, as a right-thinking American, what I consider to be a right-thinking American, who is anti-fascist, who is anti-racist, who is anti-white nationalist, you cannot presume, as a person like that, that law enforcement is going to be on your side.
Well, it's the FBI in peace and war.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I think we have some callers.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go. George, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for putting a spotlight on it, to use a phrase that may be a little unfortunate, on the FBI. There is a book about the FBI Crime Lab, and it's, I guess the authors, two guys named Kelly and Wearn, W-E-A-R-N-E, and Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. The book is, by the way, the title is Tainting Evidence, Inside the Scandals at the FBI Crime Lab, published in about 2000. These authors detail a number of cases in which the FBI was unashamedly engaged in, I think the word would be forging, falsifying what was called evidence, And I just mentioned the book because I, in reading it, I thought I was something of a person aware of how awful things have been getting. But I said, good God. Anyway, I just thought I'd put that on the air, and thank you very much. And I'm interested in your comments, but they're terrific. Keep going.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
We appreciate the call. 231-8187. If you disagree, you're more than welcome to call as well. I don't want to discourage people who think we're full of it, though I don't think we are. I think that this is a historically significant moment in the history of Portland, because repudiation of this essentially what I see as potentially totalitarian police enforcement is very important. And I'm disappointed that any members of the city council don't understand how easily propagandized they can be. I don't know of, and I cannot say that there weren't, some threats to the port. But when you bring up something like that, of course, if you're a responsible member of the government, you say, oh, my goodness, well, let the FBI and the city police and so on deal with it. How can you refuse? But that's propaganda. And the fact is that people don't seem to understand that this is a phenomenon that goes way back in our history, basically to crush the left and to crush liberalism and to crush any form of dissent, particularly on the left.
Yeah, and there's an undeniable racial component to this as well.
And yeah, I shouldn't have left that out. It's clearly,
right.
I mean, we must never forget that the Black Panthers came out of Oakland after constant harassment of black people in Oakland. And we must never forget that people in the Black Panthers were murdered systematically by what we understand to be agents of the government.
Yep. And the Church Report, which, as our guest mentioned earlier, was a congressional investigation into the excesses of the FBI during that era, with regard to the Black Panthers in San Francisco, said, as far as they were able to tell, the Black Panthers were heavily involved in feeding breakfast to poor folks in San Francisco.
Yeah, and as far as I can tell, in Portland, the same was true.
Yeah, exactly. You said just a minute ago that this is a very important moment in the history of our country with regard to this stuff. But I think we can take that to a much larger scale. This is a very important moment in our country with regards to all sorts of things, not just the way law enforcement is used by the power structure in this country, not just the people that it targets, but on issue after issue, climate change, on money in politics, on systemic racism. All of these things right now are being discussed at a level and at a scale that I really haven't seen in my adult life. You know, I didn't live through the 60s the way you did. But I'm
not sure it's a virtue.
Well, living through it, yes, that's a virtue.
Surviving,
but,
yes.
You know, but it seems that that was also a time where these things were being discussed in such a way. Jesse Jackson on Twitter said something that was retweeted by our favorite pinko commie, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez.
He said, I so like her.
She's awesome. Jesse Jackson tweets, there is a wide gulf between the political center and the moral center. What's different now is that the moral center, what is right, is also popular. I think that's a really insightful way to talk about this moment that we're in right
now. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that is very insightful.
Yeah, and he goes on to say, MLK used to teach, cowardice asks the question, is it expedient? And then expedience comes along and asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? Conscience asks the question, is it right? So we're having a moment right now where we're asking, is this right on all sorts of things? And I think and this is where you're probably going to think I'm a naive youngster, as you've accused me many times in the past. My sense is if we push hard enough and in a sustained and organized sort of way right now, that we might just be able to tip this republic back towards something that is heading towards enlightenment instead of away from it.
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on that particular idea, the tipping,
geez.
But I will comment on the fact that from my perspective, as I watch the creep in charge, the commander-in-chief, getting cornered in his crimes, I'm expecting him to create a war somewhere, perhaps Venezuela.
Venezuela or Iran?
Or Iran.
Yep.
Or maybe both.
Yeah, we'll have to see what the odds are with the bookies right now.
Yeah, really. Okay, we do have callers. I want to go out to the callers, 231-8187. Ross, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, my friends. How are you doing today?
Very well.
Good.
Hey, I guess I'm calling just because I want to at least add one voice of caution. Are we going to have an FBI after are you advocating getting rid of the FBI?
Am I personally?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
As it's
okay.
Wait a minute, I want to be clear. As it's constituted right now, in its history, it has not been an agency that really goes after crime. It is an agency that really attempts to suppress dissent.
Well, I don't know if you've been watching TV at all, but I saw a program on the radical right that's just mushrooming. I can't imagine not wanting the FBI to be on their heels, and I'm sure they are.
Well, I'm not sure they are at all.
Well, then I think you're mistaken.
Well, and, I could be.
I have to say,
since it's secret,
if you look at the history, there are many cases of FBI conducting investigations, and you wish they would do something with their information that would be supportive of the progressive movement, which sometimes they're not. But the FBI, after all, did go down to the South and find the killers, even though the people in the South didn't ever put them in jail.
The
but
FBI.
You have to have the FBI.
Ross, actually,
You have to have intelligence.
Ross,
have you ever been a member of an organization that didn't have weirdo people and violent people? They're everywhere. It's not wrong in fact, it's essential.
Yes, Ross, I have belonged to organizations that didn't have violent weirdos in them. Yes, I have.
Well, okay, that must have been a small organization.
Mm. Who are you hanging with, Ross?
Anyway, the point is that I'm thinking your reference of the history of evils of the malfeasance of the law enforcement is missing the point. The point is to control them and have the right law enforcement. And today the issue is, what in the world is this task force on national security, whatever it is? What is that? And I don't think you're enlightening us. You're just telling us about terrible things that law enforcement does, and of course we're automatically supposed to knee jerk be against it. It may be a good idea. It may enhance improving our police as opposed to hurting it.
Well, it may be, but I don't think so. Anyway, Ross, I want to thank you for the comment, and I think we have other people. I want to catch at least one other person. Francis, you're on the air.
Hi.
Back to the discussion about what is right, I just wanted to mention that Congresswoman Omar was forced to apologize for her statements regarding the huge lobbies in Congress, particularly those that are supporting the Israeli oppressive policy against Palestine. I want to know which of the, and this included Democrats telling her she needed to apologize. I would like to know which of the Democrat so far nominees for president who have announced their campaigning for president came out in support of her First Amendment constitutional rights and made the distinction between, she was labeled as being anti-Semitic, and she was not at all. She was pointing out some very serious problems in our Congress right now.
Yeah, Francis,
I don't know if anyone is supporting her right now.
I have to interrupt you. We're running out of time, but a couple of things. There is in this country a mystification around the role of Israel. The notion of a Jewish state, the notion of a two-state or a mixed state in that region, the idea of somehow there being anything that is critical of Israel being critical of Jews and therefore anti-Semitic is very disturbing to me. And I think that this is something that really needs to be clarified. I think maybe we on this show might want to deal with this issue. I'm a little intimidated by the whole thing, because it creates such animosity and such anger in many people. But sometime we will deal with it. And Francis, I'm glad you brought it up. I don't want to discourage you, but we really are out of time.
Thank you, Francis. Appreciate that.
And I think people should go to that hearing tomorrow, 2:00 at the City Council, and see exactly what goes down. I think the Joint Terrorism Task Force is an unnecessary and potentially dangerous organization of the police.
Yeah, indeed. The earlier caller was asking you about, what is it exactly? Loosely, it is a collaboration between various law enforcement agencies in various cities, local, state, federal, cooperating, sharing information about terrorism. Innocuous on its face, perhaps, but in practice it is proving to be less than innocuous. So, anyway, thanks to everybody who took part in the conversation today. Thanks to our two guests, and we'll be back at you next week.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, Ralph Nader speaks on the unjust prosecution of those who commit crimes in the street versus those who commit crimes in the suites. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein looks at Israeli lobbyists, the militarization of the U.S. border, and other breaking news issues of the day. And at 11, Stage and Studio and Art Focus make room for a special broadcast of Peace, Love, and Soup with Tave Fache-Drake and Brian Delaney. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the button marked Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.